This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home. I actually worked at home today. I almost worked somewhere else today. It's been a weird day for internet at our house. So I was up normal time. Well, a little late to normal time, but that's another story. And then we had been having a problem with one of the functions that's supposed to send emails out to all the missionaries every morning to tell them what their latest faith promises are and contributions are for the month. And we had that fail on the morning of the 1st, right after our cutover to, you know, everybody being employed by Glue, GLOO, which was weird. And we never did figure out why that had happened, but they just killed the SQL Server agent job and we went on. But that meant the missionaries didn't get their emails. And then it worked for a couple of days. And then come Monday, didn't work. Did it work on Monday, but it didn't work Tuesday? And so then, of course, we had to start digging in and finding out what was going on. So I had got up this morning because it failed yesterday as well. But they had made some changes and we thought we had it under control. So I got up this morning and it had failed as well, but it had failed in a different way. But then we figured out what that was. So the internet was fine at my house while I was doing all that, like at 6:37. And then I was puttering along doing other things and I got ready to hop on at around 9, and all of a sudden everything was really sketchy. Oh, rats! 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 I don't think I want to do this. There is like a big long line. I don't think I'm gonna do this. I'm gonna try to get backed up. I'm not gonna go that way. So, I'm actually backing up the on-ramp at this point because the on-ramp is just clogged with traffic. So I'm gonna go a different way. Go ahead. That's right. I don't know how legal this is what I'm doing, but I don't want to go down there. Oh man, this is bad. Here, let's just pull off beside the road. So we have they're doing some work on the highway. And I was going to cut across 44, but it's not good. It's just not good. There's just all kinds of cars coming. And I can see that the highway is very much clogged up. So I'm going to wait until the stoplight stops people. And then I'm going to back up and go a different direction. If I can. So we'll see. Anyways, this is a little bit of a challenge. But maybe, we'll do this. And we'll go this way. Yay! Okay. Don't do this at home, kids. Oh, man. Anyway. Oh, yeah, don't do that. So the internet got weird about 9 o'clock, and I had a 9:30 meeting, and so I was like, oh, man. So I decided, okay, I'll just go into church and work at church, and hopefully. What was weird is that my home internet was bad, and then I hooked up through my phone, and my phone internet was bad too. I mean, it's completely different systems, and it was cutting in and cutting out and stuff going on. And so then I decided, okay, I've got a little running around I need to do anyways. I need to deposit a check. I need to mail some stuff, blah, 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 blah. I'll just run into the church, get that stuff done, get on the meeting at 9:30. We'll be fine. So I get halfway in and I realize, A, you don't have your recorder, so you can't record your podcast coming home. You don't have the check you were going to deposit, and you don't have the mail you were going to mail. I was like, oh, man. So then I turn around. It has been a wild week. I turn around and start heading home, and Jesus says, you know, by the time you get home, the internet will probably be working. And I'm like, okay. So, you know, in fact, I got home and the internet was working. So I just worked from home till there. And then I had a meeting at 12:30, and right at 12:30, it started freaking out again. I'm like, ah. So I ran upstairs. This time Verizon was okay. And we got it done. Got it done. Anyways, as far as work goes, I think I mentioned last week that we are in what is euphemistically called the stabilization phase. After we have lost a significant number of people, we are trying to keep the wheels on the cart. This week was the first time we closed cash receipts for the month and the mission systems for the month without all the auxiliary people that we don't have anymore. At one point on yesterday, we were three deep in crises. So there were like three things that needed to be fixed simultaneously. Big things. But you know, you just work along and you work with the guys and we make a little progress and this person contributes and that person contributes. And we eventually got unwound from all of that. Then we had another crisis this morning, and we eventually got unwound for that just by the time I took off. And you know, Jesus is good. You just take it one step at a time. And I did have a meeting with the Glue database guys. I think Darren Furr, my boss's boss, or I guess he's my boss. I don't know what my structure is above me at this point. He got them together thinking that maybe they could help out and offer us new suggestions about things. And so he said, well, you want to describe the thing, Phil? Sure. So I took off, did my big description and described to them the different possibilities for fixing it. And then clarified a few points for them, and basically, they came around and suggested what I had suggested in the first place. So there you go. Yeah. So it was. So, and I feel bad for these guys because, you know, they're kind of coming in. Their eyes are just wide because there's so much to do. But, you know, we'll get through it. Like one of the other programmers, he was quoting me in our daily stand-up to our new Glue supervisor, a man named Brian. He seems like a very nice guy, but he was saying, yeah, like Phil says, it'll be fine. So at the end of our meeting, we were talking about something else. I went, yeah, it'll be fine. And everybody was grinning, and we just keep going. So that was very exciting. In terms of the writing, I am going through at this point and working with ChatGPT to just redesign the covers. I had such interesting success, in part, with book 24 that I thought, you know, I might as well, because I was just thinking around. I didn't know what I was doing when I built all the covers, and so I just thought, I'm just going to go through, give all our current covers to ChatGPT and ask for suggestions and tell it what the parable is supposed to be and tell it what the nursery rhyme is supposed to be and see if it can offer suggestions. It is surprisingly good at offering suggestions for how it can do things. Like one cover has a lighthouse and there's a pirate ship on the horizon in shadow and... Oh, sorry. This is not... Oh, sorry. sorry. I am so sorry. Goodness. This is not good. Well, that's something to learn. Are we still going? We are still going. I am so sorry. Oh, man. Oh. So, the dashboard on this car, which is not my Lincoln, is tilted down. So now, instead of, I gotta be really careful if I am so sorry. Oh, so unprofessional. Not that this has ever been a professional podcast. Oh, I'm so sorry. Anyways, the dashboard in this car tilts down towards me, where in every other car I have, it tilts back. So I always have to be real careful about slowing down too fast. But in this car, I have to be careful about accelerating too fast. I'm so sorry. Sorry. Anyways, so what ChatGPT, I mean, he's really good, is that I can give it, you know, the cover that I have, and then say, okay, it's supposed to be about this, what suggestions you would make. So I have this one cover that it's the parable of the lamp, where Jesus talks about the eye is the lamp of the body, and if the eye is darkened, the entire body is darkened, which is a fascinating parable. That's fascinating. And the implications of what Jesus is saying there is really interesting. So I had on the cover kind of a lighthouse that was kind of an allegory of that, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so it had said, well, one of the things you could do is you could go into the lens on the lighthouse and you could reshape it to make it look like an eye. And then that way you would have this tie-in of the parable that with the lighthouse and the eye on it. I'm like, yeah, okay, that's good. Let's do that, you know. And it did it. It did it great. And then at one point it said, yeah, the only thing that you could make this more explicit, because the nursery rhyme was three blind mice, but there was just like a butcher cleaver there. So that was kind of giving shadows of that. You could say you can make that more explicit by putting like three little mice running around on the cover. And I went, okay, that's great. And it put four down there. So I just left it, because I thought if someone asked me about that, I can say, well, one of the mice isn't blind. So, a-brumts. So anyways, I've been working with that for the last couple of days, and it's really good sometimes, and then sometimes it just loses its brain. But I did manage to do all 24 covers and, you know, got that taken care of, and, you know, seems to be fine. So there is one little tweak on one of the covers that I just realized I need to do. Book 23 is about invitations, and it's the wedding feast of, it's the parable of the wedding feast, where God sends his emissaries out to invite people to the wedding, and they don't come, and et cetera, et cetera. And I have one character who is obviously going to respond to the invitations that are within Book 23, and ChatGPT had suggested that she have a scroll in her hand. Well, she was holding an axe in her right hand, and so I just told it, put the scroll in her left hand, and it, like, put the scroll on the floor, or no, it put the scroll in her right hand, and then the axe was just hovering there, not connecting to anything. I'm like, oh, come on. But sometimes it would do really, really well, and then other times you just could not get it. And in fact, it would tell me in a couple of spots, yeah, that kind of very specific alteration, it's not going to be good at that. You just have to composite that in Photoshop. So that's fine. So, you know, I composited a few things in Photoshop, and I've got one more composite that I need to do. So I've been working on that. I'm going to get all those things replaced. And then all of the spines of the book, now that I know how wide that whole thing is, for the last 16 books, I had a panorama scene, night sky panorama scene, going across all 12 books on the spine, and all 16 books on the spine. And I'm going to change that to a panorama for all 24 books. And so I've got spines to rebuild, but, you know, that's not that bad of a deal. And I'll just get ChatGPT to generate me a really wide picture that I can use for that. Or I've been using Gigapixel AI to do the enhancements, you know, to like up the pixel count on things. And it does a really good job, because it will double the pixel. They call that uploading. They call it upscaling. So it will upscale images so that their print quality, even though ChatGPT only generates them at screen quality, and it works well. It works fine. So I'm in the process of doing like the final tweaks on all that stuff now, and then I've got to build out the spines and go from there. So all is well. All is well. So there's that. Costuming is fine. I'm desperately trying to get done with the Talk Like Yoda Day costume so I can get on the goth costume, because I'm running out of weeks. But Talk Like Yoda Day and the goth costume are right up against each other. But I'm hoping to make significant progress on the Talk Like Yoda Day costume this weekend. And then if I can save myself out 5 weeks to do the Visigoth costume, I think I'll be okay, because it's just a lot of fabric and draping and, you know, maybe some tooling and like that and like that. I think I'll be okay. Anyway, so that's that. I had two different topics, because I had the topic I was going to do last week that I didn't do. But I came across another topic, and frankly, I have not prepared as much for this as I should have, but there is a truth down in this that I thought, well, of course, when I read about this, and I'm just going to kind of talk it out and work it out as we go here, because this is probably going to get included in my Still Whispers Machinations book somewhere in there. And it has to do with the effect of being infused into and obsessed with the attention economy. We're all in the attention economy in one way or another. Either we are bandied about by it, or we are in some small measure occupied by it. Aiden, the little guy, Dustin's little guy, he is obsessed with YouTube at this point, and specifically about the fact that you should click, subscribe, like, and comment. That's the thing. You gotta click and subscribe, like, and comment. It's just, we get this all the time. And he is convinced, well, he likes to say, I don't know that. A lot of times he will say things that are just a joke, and he knows they're a joke, but he'll act like he doesn't know he's a joke. He's a really sharp little kid. Because he's only 7, but he'll go, 1 + 1 = 3. And I'm like, you know that's not 3. And then he'll kind of grin a little bit. And he's like, 2 + 2 = 5. No, it doesn't. And he knows, but I'm just concerned that if he says that enough, his teachers are going to think like he can't add, and he can add. So he can, yes, he can add. So anyways, so he's doing all that stuff. And but he's really big now on, this must be an important thing to have 1 million YouTube subscribers. So he keeps saying, I'm a YouTuber and I have 1 million subscribers. And I go, wow, that's really amazing, buddy. And he says, do you have 1 million subscribers on YouTube? And I said, no, I don't. I've got 420 subscribers on YouTube. I don't care. Well, you should get 1 million subscribers. Okay, buddy, if you say so. So we have, but this idea of being so obsessed with how do I get more attention? How do I get more people to look at me and give me value? And I think there's a real danger there. Because while the reproductive economy, if done right, is a self-sacrificial economy. I mean, women sacrifice a lot to have children. Their time, their energy, there are after effects from having children that they have to endure for years to come. Not to mention the possible immediate consequences of death. The reproductive economy does have a component to it that is very much self-sacrifice. So that is not true of the attention economy, as far as I can see. Because the attention economy is much more narcissistic. And maybe people sacrifice their time to get more attention, but the cause that they're sacrificing their time for is turned inward. I mean, there is an element to the fact that some of the underlying motivation for women, and I learned this in Asia, because in Asia they're just really honest about some things. I mean, they're just like, yeah, that's why I'm doing it. You know, that sometimes when women have children, it's really about the value that the child brings to the family. You see this in the Philippines all the time. They have large families. And if you talk to them, when I was there, and I would talk to them, or my dad would talk to them about large families, their whole philosophy was, look, we're probably going to lose, you know, one or two of these children. And, you know, if we have 15 children, we can afford to lose one or two. Really? But if we have like 15 children, it really improves the chances that one of them is going to end up, you know, being a doctor, being a lawyer, something like that. And then that person is going to be able to provide for the whole family. It's really, that's the way things are thought of. And especially if you have 15 children and then those children have children, for a grandmother who can then become the matriarch, that is a tremendous resource pool. So yes, there is some of that in reproduction. And yes, that is a kind of, there is a hint there of self-centeredness, but the attention economy, I think there's much more self-centeredness there, and there's much more pretension. There's much more potential to have that become really narcissistic. I mean, in fact, the word narcissistic comes from Narcissus, who I believe was the young man. I think it was a young man that, you know, got so enraptured by his own appearance that he just stared at himself, I think, till he died. He found his reflection so entrancing, he just wouldn't eat. And so there's this idea, even in the word narcissism, of being completely captured by appearance and by presentation and by trying to generate attention. And one of the interesting outcomes, I saw this, opinion piece by Matt Walsh that was called "The Weird Downside of the Fat Jab Craze That's Quietly Reshaping Marriages." Oh, this is Michael Knowles. Sorry, it's not Matt Walsh. And what's funny is I don't think this is a weird downside at all. I think this sounds pretty inevitable to me, because apparently with all of these GLP-1 agonists available and all these people taking these shots that really suppresses their their appetite, so they just eat less and get skinny. I mean, it's amazing how many of the people have just slimmed down all of a sudden over the last couple of years. People who battled their weight all their lives, like Oprah, you know, they're all thin now. And people that used to say it's all about the base and they were so happy that they were plump, yeah, they've thinned down now, you know. Everybody's going after that look. They're going after that ideal of being able to generate more attention to myself and get my appearance to where I'm much closer to whatever this archetypal shape is that is being pushed at us by the marketers. So you've got this situation where lots and lots of people, you know, and some people say it's for health reasons, and maybe in some cases it is, Michael Knowles was saying, but for a lot of people, they just want to look better. They want to have a better appearance. He says, well, as it turns out, there's a real downside to the practice. Namely, people are now getting divorced because of them. So the Telegraph in the UK had an article that said, fat jabs to unleash divorce boom. Did a study and said that couples undergoing rapid weight loss are twice as likely to end quote unquote unhealthy relationships. What is an unhealthy relationship? Generally, that just means a relationship I no longer enjoy being in. Does that mean one of your spouses is beating you, or does it just mean that you're sick of your husband or wife? It can mean any of those things. The article continues, the growing popularity of the fat jabs is expected to increase Britain's divorce rates as slimmed down partners look for new love, health experts said. According to research from academics in Sweden, people who undergo rapid weight loss are twice as likely to divorce. The study focused on people who had been fitted with gastric bands, known as bariatric surgery, but the risk of weight loss drugs will trigger an even larger divorce trend in the future, the researchers said. So Michael Knowles had actually interviewed a guy who went by the title of Clavicular, who was a looks maxing guy, looks max. And that means I'm going to look physically as good as I can, and I will do, especially in my face, and I will do everything I can to attempt that. And at one point in the interview, they were talking about, if that means hitting my head in the face with a hammer to look better, I'll do that. And Michael Knowles had asked him, what do you want? What are you after? And he said, I just want to look as good as I possibly can. I want to look max. So Michael Knowles said he was a handsome 19-year-old, very thoughtful. And he said, I finally asked him, okay, so what is looking good for? What's the goal? And he said the young man didn't have an answer, and the answer he gave was, I just want to mog. Okay, so what is mogging? Tired dictionaries could be written on that word. Basically, it means to dominate, to be better than others, to outshine them. I want attention. I want my looks to tell everybody that I'm better than they are. That's well, it's really hard to attribute all of those motivations to spirit, you know. And Michael Knowles was saying, I used to think if you're a guy, you want to look good to get a girl. Or if you're an actor, you want to look good in order to get a part in a movie or to get a job or win votes or something. But mostly men want to look good to get a girl. Same for women to attract a guy. But this particular guy said, no, it's all about looks maxing for its own sake, even if it has negative effects. He was taking so many hormones that he was impotent, couldn't have kids. Well, that defeats the purpose, right? The point is to look good, get married, and have family, and you just determined that. But he said that's not even the point. So that brings us back to the fat jabs. Why are people getting them? What is it for? They say it's for health, but there are downsides too, so I don't know. Talk to your doctor. You know, and Michael Knowles said, if you're single, I kind of get it. It's tough out there. But if you're already married, isn't there something kind of fitting about getting a little plump? You're not on the market anymore. You want to look good for your spouse, but you're no longer competing at the clubs every night. Well, yeah, but I want to be careful how I say this, because if there is a legitimate health concern and you have found it impossible to lose weight any other way, there definitely may be some benefit to the GLP-1 injections. Because as I reported on the reporter who was reporting on this stuff, who had started taking these injections and actually lost a lot of weight, he was actually obese enough that it was a definite health hazard. So the hazards of the GLP-1 injection were actually less than the hazards of being obese, so he took them and dropped a bunch of weight. But you have to be really careful, I think, because as soon as you start getting attention for doing that, and as soon as you are doing it really because you haven't solved some underlying issues of being addicted to food and you haven't gotten control of your flesh is just going to take that and run with it. And since you have sort of acquiesced to the flesh by starting the GLP-1 injections in the first place, once you get to the point where you feel like you look better, the first thing you're going to do is you're going to kick your spouse to the curb, because since the flesh has moved you enough to the point where you're getting GLP-1 injections as opposed to trying some of the more traditional things that require more discipline than simply jamming a needle in your arm, now the flesh is obviously going to take it on the offensive and try to use that victory that you have had losing that weight as a further impediment to your spiritual growth, and then drive you more towards your dissatisfactions, and then point you at your spouse and say, well, you've taken care of yourself now, but they aren't even taking care of themselves, and they're not even trying, and they should be trying, you know. And so then the flesh has plenty to work with. So yes, of course the divorce rates are going up. And Michael Knowles concludes his commentary by saying, and if you make an idol out of your looks, that might actually undermine your marriage. Yeah, absolutely. Because whatever you're worshiping at that point, if it's not spirit and it's flesh, the flesh will just spread its destruction everywhere it can. So Michael Knowles said, and what does it profit a man to gain the whole world and lose his soul? And Michael, on a takeoff on that, said, what does it profit someone to lose all the weight but lose their marriage? What does it profit a man to looks max but lose his family and his legacy? You know, what's in it for you? You've got to ask that question about everything in life. So Michael Knowles said, back before modern philosophy scrambled everyone's brain, back to Aristotle, we understood that to know something, what something is, you have to know what it's for. So what's the fat jab for? It may be for health. It might be. I know someone who has had the injections that's helped him to lose weight, and it has absolutely improved his life. You know, but if Michael Knowles says, what does it profit a man to mog the whole world but lose his maybe slightly chubby wife? Michael Knowles said that's not a good trade. And for me, I would simply say you just have to be really, really careful of your motivations. I mean, anytime you're trying to draw attention to yourself, you really have to be careful of the motivations. You have to understand why it is that you might be pushing yourself forward. Frankly, I push myself forward every weekend. I put on a costume, I am noticed. But I'm not doing it to try to gain advantages over others. I'm not doing it to try to gain followers so that ads can play on my YouTube channel. I keep telling Aiden this. He's like, how many subscribers do you have? And I'm like, buddy, I don't care how many subscribers I have. And I said, I will tell you the truth. I don't know if it's sunk in, but I keep telling him this. I will tell you the truth. You will never hear me say, please like and subscribe and leave a comment, because that helps the algorithm, because I don't care about the algorithm. I'm not putting on costumes so that I can get more subscribers, so that I can get paid more advertising. That's not why I'm doing it. I'm doing it to give me the opportunity to share with people, speak with people, get to know people, become their friends, and if possible, pray with them over issues in their lives. That's the point. That's the point. It's not about me pushing myself forward just so that I can say, look how great I am and what I have accomplished. And I think that's really, as we move through life and we're making decisions, why am I doing this? It's really an important thing to keep in mind and be honest with ourselves. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home. Have a great weekend, everyone. I am so sorry for dumping the recorder onto the floor. Oi. Have a good weekend.